Whether you're ordering wings for the game, whipping up a 7-layer dip, or ordering pizza, there's something about football that makes you want to eat. And this football season, Uber Eats has the best deals on game day food. No matter what you're craving, from 2-for-1 pizza to buy one, get one wings, Uber Eats will be dropping new deals each week, all season long. Uber Eats, official on-demand delivery partner of the NFL. Order now. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
I think I just won my taxes.
Yeah?
I just switched to H&R Block in about 1 minute. All I had to do was drag and drop last year's return into H&R Block, and bam, my information is automatically there.
So I don't have to go digging around for all my old papers to switch?
Nope.
Sounds like we just leveled up our tax game.
Switching to H&R Block is easy. Just drag and drop your last return. It's better with Block.
When it comes to towing, seeing is believing. That's why Chevy Truck's advanced camera technology offers up to 8 available cameras for 14 unique views, so you can focus on the view that really matters. Chevrolet, together let's drive. Learn more about Chevy Trucks at Chevy.com. Safety or driver assistance features are no substitute for the driver's responsibility to operate the vehicle in a safe manner. Read the vehicle owner's manual for important feature limitations and information.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Snooker Scene Podcast. I'm Dave Hendon. I'm not alone this week. We've had a few guest presenters on during the summer. We've got another one. So it's hello to Michael Day. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Dave. Thank you very much for having me on. It's a real pleasure.
Well, we'll see about that. See how you're feeling half an hour. No, thanks for coming on. And I'm sure a lot of people are aware of you already, but just to explain your background and kind of what you do.
Yeah, sure. So I guess sort of going back, my journey in snooker is quite typical, really. My grandparents were fans of the sport. And I think my very first memory of snooker was back in 1992 around my grandparents' house watching Jimmy White's 147 at the Crucible. Mm. So that's not a bad sort of first frame to watch on TV. And sort of ever since then, I was hooked. And my parents tell me stories that I used to get pieces of fruit like oranges and stuff, put it on the floor and use my nan's crotch to hit the balls with, to hit the fruit balls of fruit with. So, you know, and ever since then, I've been obsessed with the sport, whether it's, you know, been playing it or writing about it, talking about it. And I'm very sort of grateful now that I've, you know, snooker's kind of my profession. So I've worked within the sport for sort of several years. I'm sure we'll come on to that in a minute about my new website with Totally Snookered, but absolutely love it. You know, absolute honour to work within what I think is the best sport in the world.
Brilliant. And you're down there in sort of Plymouth, which a lot of snooker fans will have visited, I'm sure. We had a lot of great tournaments down there. British Open used to be down there at the pavilions. Is the pavilion still there?
It is. It is, Dave. Yeah, it's still there. It's not a huge venue. No. And it's a nice venue, but the issue with the pavilions, it's got sort of several other sort of facets to it. So it used to have a swimming pool, an ice skating rink. And the problem with the pavilions, it kind of didn't really know what it was, whether it was sort of an arena or sort of like a play thing for the council. But it's still there. We've still got shows and the local basketball team play there. And it would still be a great arena for snooker to come down. But unfortunately, we haven't seen anything competitive since I think the Premier League back in 2012-2013, but it's still there.
It always seemed popular though. I mean, I remember obviously the great final was Nigel Bond, John Higgins, and people can look that up on YouTube, but the atmosphere, I know it was obviously a close match, but the atmosphere was fantastic.
Amazing, absolutely amazing. And I think I went to every single British Open final, and I think in 1993, the very first year I watched live snooker, that was the International Open, because Sky obviously did the coverage of all that. But the Nigel Bond, John Higgins game was, I'll remember that for the rest of my life. I was with my dad and people were on their feet at the end of that game. It was such a dramatic, tense finale. And the way Nigel Bond come back, and I will always remember, like you say, Dave, people can go onto YouTube to watch it, but Nigel Bond cut that black in at the end. It was a difficult black. He's just got down, like he's down the club, cut it in. And people are on their feet. It was such an amazing finish. And especially the way Nigel come back, having needed a snooker in that final frame, I'll never forget that.
We stayed in a hotel there, and there was a nightclub in the basement. And that's a side issue, but it was a popular location. But I was thinking about this actually. It's something that has changed. When I started in snooker, there were so many tournaments by the seaside, and actually, the weather wasn't always the time of year you went on holiday, but people actually did tie in going to the snooker. Like, we were in Bournemouth, Blackpool, Brighton, obviously Plymouth, we already mentioned. That's kind of changed. Llandudno, that is by the sea, but obviously within the UK, a lot of really great venues now. Manchester was fantastic last season, but more sort of urban. I'm not saying one's better than the other, but it's something that's definitely changed. You're a good friend, of course, of a new professional, Hayden Pinney, who was knocking on the door a while, wasn't he? But you must be delighted that he's now on the tour.
Yeah, I mean, I've known Hayden probably since he was like sort of 8, 9 years old. We used to play at the same Riley Snooker Club in Plymouth. That's not there anymore, unfortunately. But I've seen him grow up into a man, and does my head in at times. You know, sometimes, you know, I wish.
Well, he's a snooker player.
Yeah, that's par for the course. But I've known him for such a long time. Know his family as well, and just seen him sort of grow up, and it's. It's amazing sort of seeing him in like the bottom division of like our local league system, you know, and getting better in his highest break. And I can't remember exactly when he made his first century, but I always said to him, I said, look, as soon as you make your first century, I'll give you £100, you know. And it was sort of like, you know, just to encourage, to get him to practice and, you know, to get on the bays. And once he had his first centuries, then sort of like the floodgates open, because you know you're capable, you know you've got the ability. But he's had so many sort of knocks in recent years where he's got to the final round of Q school. And I think he got to the final round, first of all, in 2020. So that was the Q school sort of behind closed doors, you know, and under COVID conditions, and everything like that. And he was probably far too soon to get on the professional circuit then. He played Jamie Wilson, actually, who was a very young himself. And Hayden said to me, it went to deciding frame. And I think he missed the brown or something like that. It would have been interesting to see how he would have got on if he qualified back then. Because, for example, Jamie Wilson got on, you know, brilliant talent, but he dropped off and we haven't really seen him since. So you kind of wonder whether some players get on the circuit too soon. It sort of demoralises them.
Yeah.
But like I say, Hayden, he got to the final round the last 4 years running, and it was just like Groundhog Day, really. You know, every time he lost... You know, we spoke on the phone or via messenger saying, look, you know, I don't know what it is. I can't get past this last hurdle. And, you know, it was just amazing this year to see him get past Gerard Green. And it was, I don't know if many people saw it online or followed the scores, but Hayden went 3-0 up, was coasting. Gerard Green was under the pump. And he's just started clawing back. He made it 3-1, 3-2. And then it's really getting scrappy and really tense. But Hayden managed to get across the line, and it's fantastic. But as I've said to him, the hard work starts now.
Absolutely. I mean, I commentated on him last year. He beat Luca Brasel. He played fantastically. This was the last tournament before Luca won the World Championship. Obviously, he wasn't on the tour then. It's different, I think, when you get on the tour suddenly, you know, it is very much your profession. It's very hard to stay on, isn't it? That's the thing. I mean, you know, you have to do... It's not about being consistent, actually, in this ranking system. It's about doing well in one of the tournaments. For example, if you had a run in Saudi, you know, that'd be massive in terms of building up the points over the two-year system. But the odd sort of last 16 probably won't cut it.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. And that's what I've been saying to him recently, because he's had a bad start to the season, come bottom of his Championship League group, lost all three of his qualifying matches. But I said, look, the Saudi event, you know, there's so much money in it. If you win a couple of games, string it together, you know, you claw back the money you lost last month. And just going back to what you said, Dave, about, you know, it's just a completely different world, the professional circuit. As a top amateur, you're winning the majority of your matches. So your confidence is up. You've got no sort of self-doubt. You're used to winning. But as soon as you get on the professional circuit, you're going to lose the majority of matches. So your confidence takes a dent. You're probably a stronger player. But because you're losing all the time, it is such a grind. And I've spoken to several other players as well with Totally Snookered, people like Liam Graham and a few other sort of players sort of in the mid-ranks, lower ranks, and they just say how brutal it is, you know. But I'm with you, Dave. If you can string a few games together, get a good run, it just takes the pressure off and sets you up for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and we've seen as well a lot of top players have dropped off and come back on and been stronger. I mean, you know, Neil Robertson, Sean Murphy, Karen Wilson, three world champions have done it. So, you know, you've got to be in for the long haul. You mentioned they're totally snookered. So this is your new website. So tell us sort of background to that and what sort of people, I mean, obviously people can go on it right now, but what people can expect to see on it.
Yeah, sure. So I initially had a blog, which was sort of like a side thing besides my sort of normal work. That was called The Cue View. And, you know, I was very lucky that I started doing a little bit of freelance work with the WPBSA. So Matt Hewitt, he was the chief comms bloke there. He spoke to me and I did a few projects for them. But in terms of Totally Snookered, I spoke to a few guys from the National World Media team. So they're a big publisher here in the UK and they own sort of loads of different newspaper brands and everything like that. And they were looking for new sports products for their portfolio. And obviously snooker is still a hugely popular sport in the UK. We see that, you know, with viewing figures and all online stuff like that. And we got talking about creating a new brand, and Totally Snooker was actually went live earlier this year, just in time for the World Championship. So we have a website, so totallysnookered.com. We've got social media channels, a Facebook page, we're on X, on Threads. And yeah, it's basically independent snooker journalism. So we're going to be covering all the professional events, all amateur events as well. We're also going to sort of be dabbing in a few of the other Q sports like nine ball and hay ball and other things like that. And what I really want to do is create sort of like a, on social media, really create a community for snooker fans. I think World Snooker Tour have done a really good job over the last sort of recent year or so, trying to get more fan engagement and things like that. But I really want to create sort of like a central hub where all fans can come, regardless whoever your favourite player is, and, you know, just talk to like-minded people, really.
Yeah, and I mean, what I'll say about it is you've been very industrious. There's a lot on there already. You know, because obviously, I mean, for example, there's no main tour snooker going on at the moment, but that hasn't stopped you. I think you've done a thing today about sort of snooker in the Middle East as we look forward to Saudi. So you've also got a lot of ideas.
Yes, yeah. It's obviously over the sort of the off season, it's a bit trickier getting material and content, but you know, there's so much you can talk about snooker wise. And I think we're very lucky that a lot of snooker players, a lot of top players are still on social media and they're quite active. So there's plenty of content there. You don't necessarily see it with other sports, like football, the top players that, you know, their media team might put a tweet up or a Facebook post up, but the snooker players do it themselves. You know, it's a very human sport. So, you know, there's no shortage of things we can talk about.
Yeah, and just leaving aside your website in general, and maybe this is why you've sort of filled the market, but do you think, I mean, how well served is snooker generally online? I mean, you can only compare it to other sports, but even in the podcast world, you know, I mean, podcasts have massively exploded in the last few years. There aren't that many snooker ones still. There aren't that many websites you can go to that has original content. There's a lot of sort of journalism where one person will report it and it'll be repeated by someone else. But in terms of original content, obviously World Snooker Tour, obviously they're not the governing body, but they run the professional tour. But outside of that and outside of your own, there's not that much really, is there?
Not anymore. A big fan of Snooker HQ. I know you had David on a few weeks ago. You know, he's been doing it now for sort of 12, 13 years. His is a brilliant resource as well. But yeah, I was trying to fill the sort of gap really. And we've seen so many sort of snooker journalists like yourself, but obviously I know you're in other areas now who sort of not with us sort of anymore, who don't work with newspapers. But I'm with you. I was just a little bit frustrated as well with clickbaity content online from sort of mainstream newspapers that, you know, sensationalize things that aren't really a story. Do you know what I mean? It's just like,
well, very often it's from years ago as well. It's something that happened a decade ago. I mean, Paul Collier actually fell victim to this with all these quotes that he was talking about the original time he left World Snooker 20 years ago, that it made it look like it was the why he's retiring now, which was completely out of order.
It just winds me up. It really does wind up because I know that that's a clickbaity title, so I'm not clicking on it. But they know that the average person in the street might click on it and say, hang on, what's this about? And that's the reason why I want to create Totally Snookered as a snooker community, not to alienate snooker fans. You know, they want genuine content about the tour, about players, nothing sensationalized. And, you know, that's really what I'm trying to build. But it is frustrating. I think in terms of sort of like the wider media, I still think snooker gets good coverage, but not as good as what I think it should, because, you know, we are a very popular sport in the UK. Our television figures are really good, but the trend for other sports in terms of sort of linear coverage. And, you know, I still think there's an element of snobbery. We'll probably talk about the Olympics later on. I still think there's an element of snobbery towards that as well, in terms of snooker. And I just think we should have a bit more respect.
Yeah, I mean, the newspaper industry has changed a lot. But, I mean, in general, one of the problems with snooker always in the newspapers is it had a reputation, quite well-deserved reputation, of being late. And so, you know, they kind of put all the pages together. They're waiting on, let's say, you know, Dave Harrell to beat, you know, against John Parrott at the Masters or whatever to finish before they can go home, basically. And it got the reputation we kind of don't want snooker because it's just messing up our day, sort of thing. I know that sounds, to the outside world, that sounds kind of unlikely. But I've been there, honestly. Like, it's the first question they would ask you if you rang up the sports desk is, what time will it finish? And of course, you can't give an answer. But what they mean is it going to be late? And of course, so often it was. But I think obviously now with the online world, that kind of doesn't come into it. So, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff done. Phil Hague obviously does a lot of really good pieces on the Metro Online. There are other people as well. And you're now contributing. And also you have a vodcast, which I didn't even know there was such a thing, but you have one.
So just going back to National World Media, they have a here in the UK, they have a Freeview channel called Shots TV, and it's also online, it's on demand. And part of the sort of package working with them is that they wanted a weekly vodcast. So not used to sort of talking to snooker players in front of cameras. It's been a bit daunting the first few weeks, but we have a weekly show. We tend to do the recording on Tuesday mornings, and it's only sort of like half an hour. It's quite sort of chilled out, laid back. And yeah, really enjoyed it. The first few weeks we've had Jason Ferguson on. And I'm trying to get a good sort of cross section of people across the snooker industry. So not just players, obviously officials, fans, you know, other people in the industry. But yeah, we've had Jason Ferguson, Gary Wilson. I've had Hayden on as well, which is nice, obviously, speaking to a close friend like that. Liam Graham, Aaron Hill. And yeah, we've got a lot. We've got loads more players coming up in the coming weeks.
So just remind us where we can see that.
Yeah, sure. So it's on Shots TV. So here in the UK, the Freeview channel is on 276. Usually the programme goes out live on a Thursday evening about 10 o'clock. But it's also, and it's also online at shotstv.com. So that's sort of our on-demand service. So if you go to there, type in Totally Snookered, you'll be able to see all the previous episodes. We also share sort of little snippets on social media. So if you follow us on social media, Totally Snookered, you'll get an alert as soon as a new episode is online.
Okay, brilliant. Well, we're going to go to the emails now. You mentioned the Olympics. We've had one from Brian McGovern here. He said, further to my question regarding snooker at the Olympics, I have an idea about the format. How about a Masters-style format for the top 16 at the end of the season rankings and a one-table setup? I know it's not actually original, but I think it'd be worth a try. Could start on the first Sunday and end on the second Sunday. Alternatively, why not have a shootout over 4 days and open it up to the 1-8? I think the latter sounds a better idea. Love to hear your thoughts. Love the podcast. Have you checked out the Snooker Hall podcast presented by Dan Murren, who's very passionate? His guest this week is Ben Williams, which I'll be looking forward to checking out. He previously had Mandy Fisher. Well, not only have I heard of it, Dan's on next week. So Dan will be on this podcast next week. So we'll talk about that then. The Olympics, the problem, Brian, certainly with the 1-8, is obviously the Olympics, it's per nationality. So you'd only be allowed a certain allocation per nationality. So obviously the Brits and I guess China would, you know, that would be a bit of a knife fight to get in it. But some of the other nationalities, imagine Urson Bakker from Switzerland, he'd be in it. But that's how it's done. What's your view that you mentioned it earlier? I think you're chomping at the bit to say something about the Olympics, Michael.
we should be in. We should be in. And just going back to the format, I don't think it was much of a secret, but I think the idea a few years ago when there was a real sort of effort to get snooker in the Olympics was to actually play under the six red format. Which is quite interesting. I'm not sure sort of traditional snooker fans would like that, but I understand the reason why they would perhaps use that format. I think we should be in. I mean, I love the Olympics to bits. You know, I've watched loads of it over the last couple of weeks. But you see certain sports like shooting, target sports like archery, and I love these sports. I'm not, you know, not decrying them at all. But I'm thinking, well, why isn't snooker in the Olympics? I put a few things out on social media. People say, well, the sport's not international enough. I actually think that's nonsense. If you look at like the World Snooker Federation, we've got more national governing bodies than ever before. Those countries are hosting sort of national tournaments, national events. And yeah, the standard of those players is not up to professional scratch. But if you take, for example, look at the basketball at the Olympics, the men's basketball, America are going to win it. They pretty much win it all the time. Do you know what I mean? They're playing, I think they're playing France in the final, and they're heavy favourites to win it. So you're always going to have countries that are, you know, going to have stronger players than others. But why aren't we in it? I don't understand it. I think it comes down to the image of snooker again and, you know, stories perhaps from the 80s and certain players getting in, you know, nuisance and trouble and stuff like that. And I just think there's a stigma around snooker, and it's snobbery. It's snobbery, Dave, I think.
Yeah, well, I heard Sean Murphy on the 147 podcast talking about this, and he, as I said, actually had been sort of, he did a speech in Paris and represented snooker, but I think he made the point, and I agree, that our best chance is collectively Q Sports, because there is a certainly between snooker, pool, and carom a massive international spread. I mean, I was at the World Pool Championship. There were 12 nationalities in the last 16. Yeah, that's a proper international sport. But between the three of them, and obviously this, you see the variances between them, that might be the way forward. But how it's going to happen, I don't know. But anyway, we've got Alpha Bonzi here, who's written in on this. He said, I might be your only correspondent who isn't watching the Olympics. I think snooker's failed attempt to get in the Games hit its low point at the 2002 China Open in Shanghai, when some members of the Olympic Committee were expecting to meet with the then board of the World Snooker at a dinner, but typically none of them made the journey east, leaving tournament director Martin Clark to try and successfully to pick up the pieces. I was there at that. That's true. That did happen. I mean, it's a different era, but that obviously didn't help. Anyway, Alpha moves on. We've been asking about players who our listeners would like to see do well this season. He says, players I'd like to see do well for the game internationally, I think it needs Neil Robertson to start lifting trophies again. And for UK shores, I'd love to see someone like Stan Moody pick up a major trophy. Snooker needs its own Luke Littler. P.S., my idea for top tens, now this is a new, well, it's the premium feed, but it's free still on Wednesdays, top tens. My idea for top tens is top 10 matches no one ever saw, i.e. not televised. And he suggests a couple of world finals. The problem with that, of course, is if no one saw them, how can we how can we rank them? But anyway, but going back to his, I mean, he's right, isn't he? A Luke Littler. I mean, if it's Stan Moody, whoever it is, that would be fantastic for snooker.
It would be amazing, yes. It's actually, it's interesting because I spoke about this to Liam Graham on my vodcast a couple of days ago, and he seems to think that we won't see a sort of Luke Littler style in snooker sort of for a very long time. But of course, Ronnie O'Sullivan was our Luke Littler back in 1993 when he won the UK championship. But it would be amazing.
Have, that's the point. We have seen it.
Yeah.
Hendry was 18 when he won a record. Yeah. Paul Hunter was 19. And John Higgins was a teenager. He won three when he was a teenager. So it has happened. Ding, obviously, just turned 18, won a ranking event.
Yeah. And I mean, Si Jiawei a couple of years ago, he could have been the youngest world champion of all time. He was only within two wins of that. So, but it would be incredible to have a teenage winner again, and you know, not being greedy, but a non-UK overseas winner. And it is exciting at the minute because we've got a lot of new youngsters on the circuit, players like Artemijs Sissons from Latvia and Anthony Kowalski from Poland, UK-based players like Liam Davies. We do have these youngsters now on the professional circuit. But like you've mentioned before, Dave, it's whether we have exceptional talents, talents that are really going to challenge, you know, the class of 92 and the top players. But it would be amazing to see a youngster come through. Whether that's going to be this season, I don't think so. What I would like to see this season is perhaps a new Chinese winner, whether that's Si Jiawei or Zhou Yulong, Huan Sizhen. I mean, when we talk about Zhou and Huan, we've talked about them for the last few years, but they've kind of sort of stayed still, haven't they? They've sort of hovering around sort of 17 to 32, you know, very consistent, getting to like last 16s, quarters, stuff like that, but they're not really made the breakthrough yet. And like you mentioned before, to get in the top 16, you sort of invariably have to win a tournament these days because of the prize money ranking structure. So it'd be great to have a Luke Littler type thing, but I'm not sure it's going to come this season, unfortunately.
Well, you mentioned Joey Long, and people think this podcast is just thrown together, but here's an email from Phil Spivey. He says, last time you asked which players we'd like to see win a title this season, no pun intended. I don't think there is a pun there, but anyway, that's a side issue. One player I'd love to see lifting a trophy is Joey Long. He's such a talented player and heavy scorer. Whenever I see him play, it's hard to believe he's never been ranked in the top 16, although he hasn't qualified for the Crucible since 2019. Other than that, it's always great to see the various narratives develop around each tournament, as every winner, whether an elite player, a rank outsider, or someone in between, brings their own story to their victory. Can't wait for the season to properly get up and running. Joey Long, I recall, he was unlucky. I mean, listen, everyone was unlucky around the pandemic, but he, I believe, went back to China, so missed the World Championship, and he was right on the cusp of the top 16. You know, I think that could have got him in, and then who knows, he could still be in. Having said that, of course, he's had some knocks since. I mean, obviously, last season, celebrate it. And whenever you see someone give it the fist and snookers are needed, you can guarantee the snookers will be got. Gary Wilson got them in that semi-final, didn't he, in Scotland? And that must have been a big blow. But put it this way, it wouldn't be a surprise, would it, if he won a tournament? He's sort of high up on that list of players who you think could do it.
Definitely. Yeah, he is. He's in that group of players who are just waiting to have that big breakthrough. But I think there's a couple of others as well. I was on Q-Track the other day looking at certain players. You've got someone like Hossein Vafai. Now, obviously, he's won the shootout, but in terms of, you know, a longer format ranking event, he's been to 6 semi-finals and not got to another final. Zhou Yulong is another player. Senkam, Lopan Senkam, is a player that I think, you know, I love watching Senkam. Obviously, he got to the final in Scotland last year. There is a group of players who are just waiting to break through, and I just kind of feel if they get one, they're not going to stop at that. And we mentioned earlier, Si Jiawei, semis at the Crucible, final last year in Germany. If he can sort of neaten up the rough edges, the raw nature of his game, you know, he's going to be a very dangerous player for anybody. So we're just waiting the season. And that's why I don't necessarily think we're going to see a Luke Littler sort of burst through and win a tournament. It's more likely to be these players that have been knocking on the door over the last few years.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we've got another one on this subject from Lucas in Germany. He says, I'm a little late for the question which players we want to see win a tournament this season, but I'll give you not only the player, but also the tournament. By the way, you're not late at all. All these subjects are open. You know, we'll take anything, basically. If I had one wish, it would be for Ding Junhui to finally win the World Championship. It's only a matter of time before a Chinese player wins the title, but somehow it would feel wrong to me if that player wasn't Ding Junhui. He would also complete his career triple crown, and in my opinion, he's one of the most likeable players on tour and a great ambassador for the sport. Otherwise, and this name seems appropriate in this conversation, otherwise I hope that Jimmy White does well. Winning a title is unrealistic, but maybe he can reach a quarterfinal somewhere. The same goes for all the young rookies that are on the tour now. A win is unrealistic, but I hope they'll do well. Thanks as always for the podcast that is still way better than all the others, even when it consists of 80% nonsense. Also, the top 10 episodes are a great new feature. Well, thank you, Lucas. A bit of a backhanded compliment. But anyway, Ding winning the World Championship. Well, I don't know, I was thinking about this. Logically, it feels like that ship has sort of sailed, but not necessarily. He's not 40 yet. What do you think? Put it this way. Will he end his career as a world champion or not?
Isn't that a question? I'd love him to win it. Love him to win it. He's you know, he is still young in terms of snooker, top-level snooker, but I've just got a feeling, no. You know, if I had to bet on it, I'd love him to win it. Me personally, I don't think in terms of his legacy that he necessarily needs to win it. Mm. He is the one, his role in terms of global snooker, not just Chinese snooker, you can't really estimate how big a job he's done for snooker. And following sort of COVID and the match fixing scandal, I think there were concerns from people that China may cool to sort of professional snooker. There's obviously other Q sports in China as well that are very popular. But if we look now, we've got new events on the circuit. We've got the Wuhan Open, Jiangong Prix, I know we've lost a couple, but, you know, we've got four or five really big events in China. And what I've been really pleased about since it's come back on the circuit is the crowds have been really good. Mm. You know, beforehand, there was an issue with, you know, wasn't many people in the crowd, whether the ticket prices were too expensive. But the last few events, the crowds have been really good. But love to see Ding win the world championship. But I think his legacy is already set. But yeah, I would just weigh on the side of him not winning it, although I'd love to see him do so.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is, and I know you'd expect this at the Crucible, people always seem to play well against him. I remember Karen Wilson a couple of years ago played superbly against him. Hussein Vafai last year. This season, Jack Nazowski beat him in a decider. I think he's the sort of snooker player Ding. They all love his break building, his control of the cue ball. And it's almost like they kind of raise their game, I think, sometimes against him. And we know, put it this way, if the World Championship moved to York, he'd have a great chance. He seems to play great there. So maybe it's a bit horses for courses with him. But yeah, I agree. In terms of his role in the sport, I mean, he will be remembered for two things. One, as being a multiple champion, which he's been. But as you say, the other thing, definitely what he's done in China. And I think I agree with what you say. I mean, I was a bit concerned about going back there and the twin sort of effects of the pandemic and the match fixing scandal. It's bigger than ever in China. We've seen now players are out there now doing exhibitions. There's a big demand for all of that around the tournaments. There's a lot of sort of opportunities for players around the events to make money. The tournaments feel bigger. They look better, as you say. They've got more audiences. The prize money's gone up. So China has really taken off again. And I guess the last piece of the puzzle there would be to get the China Open back on. I'm sure people are working on that. But Ding is central to that still. He's still the number one Chinese player. And put it this way, if he did win the World Championship, that would be one of the biggest things ever. And just imagine the scenes when he arrived back in China with that trophy. I mean, that would be fantastic. We'll move on. Alpha Bonzi again. We're in a quiet period, snooker-wise, due to the Olympics. So two quick questions. Number one, there are no TV deals for the Xi'an Grand Prix or Saudi Masters as yet. Has the Olympics simply taken too big a chunk out of Eurosport's and other interested broadcasters' budgets? And number two, is there anything stopping World Snooker showing them on their YouTube channel except geo blocks, or would it make too big ranking events look small time? Well, Alpha, the Saudi Masters will be on television. That will be announced formally, I'm sure, in due course. The Xi'an Grand Prix, I mean, there's nothing wrong with putting it on YouTube, but there is this issue with if they sold it to certain countries, they can't put it free on there. I would expect that to be on Matchroom Live because that's their streaming platform. I'm sure we'll find out. Well, we'll have to find out this week because the tournament's next week. But I would imagine you will be able to watch it on there. How many tables and whether you've got to pay and all that, I don't know. But you will be able to see it. I guess this is, in a way, a kind of... Well, it's a good thing, I think, because it shows how many tournaments we've got, that now, there are now a couple we can't get on telly. I mean, Eurosport have got enough snooker, I'm sure. They've shown plenty, and they'll be showing the Wuhan Open, for example, the next Chinese event. But I guess because there's so many events, you know, the odd one is not going to be on TV. So in this age that we live in, I mean, I remember the European Open down in Torquay, 2003. This was in a pretty dark time for the game. It wasn't being well run then. And that wasn't televised at all. I mean, literally, it wasn't that it couldn't be offered to anyone. There were no cameras. Whereas now, obviously, Chinese television are broadcasting this. In this age of streaming, there are options to show it. And as I say, I fully expect that people will be able to watch it. And I guess these days, you know, they're getting used to not just watching on linear TV.
Yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned the European Open because that was obviously in my neck of the woods. And my dad took me to watch one of the early rounds. I think Jimmy White, can't remember who he played. And it was a bizarre venue. Did you say you were there yourself, Dave?
Yeah, the Palace.
Yeah. it was bizarre because you had to walk through the hotel and then you had to walk outside past all the tennis courts.
Yeah.
And then you had to go into the big building. And I just remember I wasn't too impressed with the setup. And I think they also had the World Championship qualifiers there as well.
Yeah.
The final round. And the final of that European Open was an absolute classic between Ronnie and Hendry. I think they had sort of like five centuries, you know, loads of other sort of frame-winning breaks. And it was a real pity that he didn't see it. But that was kind of normal back then. There were a load of, there were several sort of overseas events that we couldn't here in the UK get access to. You know, it was either through sort of CFAX or whatever to get the results. So we are kind of used to it now that, you know, all the events are on UK television. But as you say, as the circuit expands, Eurosport can't show everything because, you know, if we're going to have, you know, 25, 30 ranking events a year, you know, it's just not possible for Eurosport to cover all of that. So, but on the other hand, this is a big tournament. You know, there's 177,000 to the winner. You know, it's the first, not slagging off the Championship League, but this is the first sort of like big ranking event of the season. And it would be a bit of a shame if, you know, we can't sort of get really good coverage of it. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, and also there'll be people outside the UK saying, well, it's like this for us a lot of the time. We have to sort of scramble to see it. But I fully expect they've got Matchroom Live. That's obviously an in-house streaming service. I fully expect it to be on there. One story about the Palace Hotel. You mentioned the World Qualifying. They played it. It was over quite a long period. They had four tables. So obviously it took a while. And the last match featured Chris Small. Now, Chris was a terrific player, but he wasn't necessarily the quickest always. And he had a back condition as well at that point, which sort of slowed him up even more. So he was the last on. And while he was, you know, attempting to get to the crucible, which is no small thing, they started de-rigging the other tables. So you heard all this clanking and the slates being lifted. And as he put it himself, you know, this wouldn't happen to Stephen Hendry, but it happened to him. I can't remember whether he got through or not. But anyway, we'll move on because there's another question, quite a not angry, but impassioned email here from, I'm going to say, Hemi, I believe. Thanks for everything you do for snooker. I have to express my deep frustration that Eurosport cancelled live streaming, and it's a joke to tell us to switch to Discovery Plus. I live in Switzerland, where Discovery Plus is not available, and I believe that is the case for many other countries too. I tried to subscribe to Discovery Plus in the UK and other countries via VPN, but that's also not possible because they demand a credit card from the country I tried to subscribe in. I understand Discovery Plus is available only in UK, Ireland, Sweden, Italy, Spain, Netherlands, Denmark, Finland, and Norway. I'm sure I'm not the only one with this problem. I appreciate any kind of help so I can continue to enjoy my favourite sport. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I mean, yeah, you're always right, I think. And it's good to hear from people who, because we speak, well, I certainly speak from a sort of UK basis, not always fully aware of the situation in other countries. There's something called Max. He's not a person. Well, it's a streaming service which is linked, I believe, to all of this. I think the Eurosport app was discontinued, but I've seen people say they watch it on there. So I don't know whether you can access that there or whether it's on there, but that's worth looking into. Otherwise, I'm afraid I can't really help. But I hope you do obviously get access to the coverage because you're clearly a big snooker fan. We'll move on to Christine. So I've started this countdown series on Wednesdays. Christine says, your top TV countdown, we did the top 10 most watched matches on British TV, is bringing back a lot of memories of sitting with my family watching TV in the 80s. Although there was limited football on, my memory of having two older brothers was that there was rarely an afternoon without boring rugby on the TV. If not rugby, it would be a Western. I saw a lot more of John Wayne in the 80s than Steve Davis. They went off to university eventually and I got charge of the TV buttons myself. When you talk about Jimmy losing 10 frames in a row, I can remember exactly where I was sitting when I watched it. The couch and TV had been moved to point in another direction because we had just got central heating radiators. Funny what you remember, isn't it? I think your resolution to do two episodes a week lasted 2 weeks last year. Looking forward to what comes next week. So there's one in the eye for me at the end there from Christine. We'll see, Christine, about that. We'll see how long it lasts. But I think what she's articulating there is what we all, certainly in the UK, feel is memories of watching on TV. And certainly going back, you mentioned, you know, your grandmother and so on, people we watched it with as well. And that is kind of a lovely link, isn't it, that the sport has. It's not just about the matches. It's about who you were with when you watched them.
Definitely. Yeah, 100%. And, like I say, my family were big snooker fans, and that's how I got involved in the sport. And essentially, I think you mentioned on a previous podcast sort of, or somebody wrote in, snooker's always there. You know, we've got things going on in our personal lives. People may pass away or we may drift away from certain friends, but snooker's always there. The crucible is always going to be there. And, you know, that's a nice link to have, that we know we've got this sort of, I don't know how to describe, but we know that the snooker's going to come up at the crucible soon. And, you know, it's nice to think, but, going back to your top 10, it brought back so many memories as well. Not nice memories, by the way, in terms of being a Jimmy White fan. I remember, well, I think everybody does, the 94 final. It was just heartbreaking for Jimmy White fans. And I think even Stephen Hendry himself said, look, If I wasn't playing, I'd be wanting Jimmy to win. And you've got Dennis Taylor on commentary saying he could cry for Jimmy, and Jimmy in the chair with his hand on his face, the groan from the crowd. And like you said, you just knew Hendry was going to clear up, even with like a broken arm, which he had a broken elbow, he's going to clear up. And I went to bed that night in tears. I was actually crying in bed, and I can't even watch it now on YouTube. I cannot watch that black. I just wince. And I'm sure it's the same for loads of other Jimmy White fans.
Well, it's the most extraordinary reaction, though. He's beginning to annoy me. You know, I mean, what a line to come out with at that point. When you contrast it, I know they're different people, but Steve Davis in 85, who'd won it already three times, by the way, by that point, could barely speak. I mean, he could see he was absolutely incandescent with rage. You could see it on his face. Jimmy, who had the chance to win it for the first time, managed to still come out with that. And I think a lot of that is, and, you know, I got to know Jimmy a bit over the years. He very much lives in the moment. You know, I don't believe for a minute that Jimmy sits at home looking back on all that. It's gone. He's thinking about next week. He's thinking about the next tournament. He's qualified for a couple, hasn't he? You know, he's looking good this season already. That's what he'll be thinking about. He's practicing on Monday, he'll be thinking about, which obviously not everyone's made that way. But I guess that's why he carries on, because otherwise, I suppose, well, you would have got sick of it by now.
Yeah, and I think just going back to that in 94, Dave, because it was his birthday as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I was saying, I think probably at the time, Jimmy kind of brushed it off because he probably thought, well, I'll come back here next year and win it. Do you know what I mean? But that was his final. That was the last time he reached the final, because Hendry beat him in the semis last, you know, the following year. But Jimmy's passion, I mean, I just don't know how he does it. You know, he's what now, 62? And, you know, he's still coming back for more. He's still punching. I think one of his, I think in a snooker magazine, he said about a quote from a sportsman. He said, Roberto Duran, just keep punching. And that's Jimmy White's sort of, you know, ethos, really. Keeps coming back for more. And, he still comes out with a thing saying that he still thinks he can win tournaments. And in reality, probably not. But, you know, on his day, he can still put in a really good performance. And it's great seeing him on a circuit. It's very likely that, you know, he'll probably lose his tour card at the end of the year, whether they give him another wild card. Probably, if he still wants to play. But, you know, I think the circuit's a richer place for having Jimmy White still about.
Well, I mean, I agree. And even just in the qualifying, when I saw he was playing, you know, I was checking the scores. People are interested in how he's doing. There isn't a great nostalgia thing to that, but so what? You know, he's a beloved figure in the sport. Our last email is from Adam Fisher. He's got two questions. I'm only going to read the first one, actually, Adam, if you don't mind. But, he says, have you done the Snooker Club's Fantasy Five? And if so, who have you gone for? Now, this is the World Snooker Tour podcast. So it's a fantasy snooker competition. I did enter it. And the only thing is, we mentioned this last week, because you don't get an automated email, I think I'm right in saying who the players are. I didn't write them down, but I'm pretty sure I went for Judd Trump because he's Judd Trump and he's, you know, so consistent at winning ranking events. Ali Carter from the next section, who... You got to fancy Ali. I mean, he's won a tournament actually already, but you got to fancy he would go deep in various events. Then Neil Robertson, because he's Neil Robertson, and I do think he will come good again. I'm not saying I don't. I mean, I read a quote from him in the week saying his game's in the best shape ever. I mean, I'm a bit dubious about that, because if that's the case, why is he down in the 20s in the rankings? But he's a proven winner, and I'm sure he'll be determined to start winning again. Then Tepchira Nu. Just because I think he's just such fun to watch. And, you know, he's erratic, yes, but again, you fancy he will have a couple of runs here and there. And then in the last section, Daniel Wells, who's a player I've always actually rated quite highly. And, you know, again, I think that he's had some good results, potentially get some more. He had a rather bruising experience, didn't he, at a tournament where Ronnie O'Sullivan basically said he would never win a tournament. But I guess, you know, you've got to try and use that as inspiration to prove him wrong. But then, mind, did you enter it, Michael?
I did, yeah. I entered it sort of last minute. My team's called the Fantasia We Five. So that's a good name. But I don't know if you're interested, but I chose Trump.
Yeah.
I think the whole world has chosen Judd Trump, because he's just such a, you know, prolific winner of ranking events now. So I went for Judd Trump, Sean Murphy, because I really think he'll have a good season. Went for David Gilbert as well, because obviously in good form and he's qualified for a few. Then I went for Aaron Hill. In the fourth section, I know that's a bit of a risky one because he's sort of, you know, around the sort of 60 mark. But I just like his style. I like his sort of not arrogance, but you know, he's a confident player, and I think he could be somebody who could. We saw it last year. He got to the, I think, quarters of Wuhan. So I really think he could do a little bit of damage this year. And lastly, I went for Long Zhang, who obviously beat Salby. Now, that's not recency bias. I watched Long last year. He actually played Hayden in the UK Championship qualifying first round. Hayden got in as like a top-up. And Hayden was up in the final frame, I think about 40, 50 points. And Long has cleared up. He's cleared up with like a 60-odd. Absolutely amazing finish. It was absolute clearance under the, you know, under the pump, under so much pressure, and he cleared up. So I thought, well, this guy's got really good bottle. And what we've seen this week, last week against Salby, he's good scorer. He was 4-1 down, won four frames in a row. I think he made at least a 50 in each of those frames. So I think he's someone to look out for as well in the upcoming season.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, but there's so many, isn't there, that you can put in that bracket. And yeah, it'd be interesting to see. There's a lot of the players on the podcast have chosen themselves. I suppose they have to.
Yeah.
Because if they don't, who will? But but they're under maybe more pressure now. But you mentioned, I'm going to put you on the spot here. You mentioned Mark Selby there, right? Now, we talked about Luca Brasel. On the end of season list, he's 55. But Selby, I noticed, is 14. Will Mark Selby, in your opinion, end the season in the top 16?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's obviously he's had so many issues off table. And I think people do forget that. I think some fans do forget the issues he had to contend with. He's class, absolute class. And it just winds me up. You know, some people who doubt his sort of greatness within the sport. He's won four world championships in possibly the, you know, one of the toughest eras of snooker for, you know, ever, you know, contending with the class of 92 and Neil Robertson and Judd Trump. He's the only player who's ever beaten Ronnie in all three Triple Crown finals. You know, just to beat Ronnie in one is a huge achievement. And there have been signs of him returning to form in the last couple of events. In Shanghai, he was quite impressive until the Murphy comeback. And against Long in the qualifier last week, he made a 130, a 135 in getting to 4-1 up. And then obviously Long did well to come back. I think he will. I think he'll win a tournament this season. I honestly do. And if you win a tournament, you're probably going to be in the top 16. So I would wager that he will be. But what do you think, Dave? Do you think...
I tend to agree. It's not certain.
No.
Because we've saw Neil Robertson. If Neil Robertson can drop out, anyone can drop out. My only concern, and it's not related necessarily to anything off table, but I know Mark is a very deep thinker. And some players could shrug off those last two defeats and just take the positives. I played well. I think he would be a bit confused, certainly about the second match he lost. You know, he was very much in control there, lost from 4-1 up. And we'll see whether that carries on now into the next event that he plays in or not. If he starts to get on a bad run, I mean, he obviously his enthusiasm dipped a bit at the end of last season. Then if he starts to get on a bad run, then it's a question of whether he can sort of dig himself out of it. But yeah, I mean, listen, Mark Selby's a great player. There are enough tournaments to come good in, aren't there? That's the thing. You know, in all the events he's going to play in this season, you fancy he's going to come good. I suppose the initial sort of target is to get into those ITV events, the Players Series. And then, you know that the second half of the season is going to be fully loaded. Let me ask you another question. The 100,000 bonus for the 100 centuries, which is going to be exciting, I think, this season. I mean, Judd's already got 10. Now, he's obviously the number one sort of favourite, but there's others who could do it. Do you think that'll happen?
I do. I think Judd will do it. And I think, let's be honest, the reason why WST have done this is to encourage a lot of the top players to enter perhaps some of the lower tier events. So obviously we've got the Bet Victor bonus this year as well, which is just for the home nations. So they're trying to encourage, you know, your Judds, Selbys, Ronnies to play in those events because there's a big kitty at the end of it, 150 grand. And it's the same with the 100-100s. I do, yeah. I think I can't see why Judd wouldn't have another brilliant season. I know that's very presumptuous of me to say that, but he is a winning machine, Judd Trump. You look at the amount of titles he's won over the last 3-4 years. It's frightening, really. I think he'll be up for it. You know, it's a challenge. And who else can make it, really? I mean, Robertson could if he was to come back to form. You know, he loves making a ton. I don't think Ronnie will play in enough events to make the 100-100s, unless he perhaps enters the Championship League Invitational, where, you know, there's big scope to make quite a few. But let's hope, that, you know, when it comes to the Crucible in the spring, that we've got a couple of players in contention who are perhaps on around sort of like 90 centuries. It would be a nice little, an additional bonus for us snooker fans. And we saw it a few years ago when Robertson made his 100-100 at the Crucible, do you know? So, I would, let's say Trump's going to do it. I think he'll do it.
Well, if he does, what I'd like to see is, at the end of a tournament where they have the ticker tape, just have money raining from the sky. Nice way to end it. I don't think Ronnie's ever understood the format of the Championship League. I don't think he's ever grasped that you're supposed to be there for 2 days, which may be a sticking point. It's interesting, though, we talked about the fantasy team. I haven't heard anybody pick Ronnie O'Sullivan. Now, maybe that is because they don't think he'll enter everything. But what we saw last season was, if he does enter tournaments, he tends to win them. And obviously that's going to do massively good on the fantasy team.
Yeah, very bizarre. Very bizarre. I'm not quite sure. I didn't actually read the sort of like rules and the scoring system. I don't know. It's like when I enter fantasy football.
Yeah, I think you just get the points that they get, I think that's what it is.
So I don't know whether it's better to have somebody who's sort of consistent like Trump, who's probably going to enter more events than Ronnie. It is a bizarre thing that we sort of seem to overlook Ronnie from certain things, when we talk about tournaments and things like that. But, Ronnie is, it's interesting because I was thinking before coming on today, Dave, that, I started watching snooker around 92, 93. So my whole life, the class of 92 have always been there. They've been the constant in my sort of snooker watching life, Higgins, Williams, O'Sullivan. But Ronnie can, he's the GOAT, in my opinion. He can do anything, write him off at your peril. But you would think it's going to be a bit of a stretch to have the same season that he had last year, because last year was just a bit freaky, even for Ronnie O'Sullivan. But it would be interesting to see whether he would have traded a couple of victories for, an eighth world. But, I still think, he's what is he, 48 now? He's still got another couple of, really good chances at the World Championship, I would think. And, the bloke's capable of anything. So all bets are off when it comes to him.
No, totally, yeah. I mean, yeah, that, you're right. I think he's just a one-off. Let's conclude. I just wanted to get your opinion on Kyron Wilson. Obviously, we're not seeing much of him this season. I mean, he did play Championship League, didn't do too well there. And then obviously to lose 6-0 in Shanghai, I think he only got there the day before, and he actually said on social media maybe, because that's the thing now, he's got more demands on his time, and that's something new he's got to manage. He's been a top player for a while, but he's never been world champion. So that's something he's got to get used to. When I spoke to Joe Johnson, it's a different era, the 80s. But he just said, I never had a chance to practice, because I was always, you can't turn down, I mean, he got invited to various things with Princess Diana. You can't turn them down, right? And also there's an opportunity to make money doing stuff. So that maybe will settle as the season goes on. But in general, the impression I get is that he'll actually have a good season, because I just think he will relish being that figure, whereas maybe Luca last year didn't actually relish it that much. He obviously loved winning it, but everything that came with it, maybe not so much.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Dave. I think it's fantastic for us to have him as the world champion. I think he speaks really well, really good ambassador for the sport. I know he's been to several different sort of functions since winning the Worlds. He was at Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital as well a few weeks ago. That was fantastic to see. And I think he really will sort of relish, being introduced as, the reigning world champion. He'll love that. And his results, I don't know how he's going to get on in terms of sort of, whether he'll win titles or anything like that. I mean, it's important to remember that up until the World Championship last year, he had a rotten season, really. He didn't get into two of the three ITV events. He was starting to come into a little bit of form going into the World Championship. I think he got to like the quarters over in China. But yeah, it'd be really interesting to see how he gets on. I wish him well. I've met Kyron before at when I was working at a World Disability event for the WPBSA at Barrett Snooker Club in Northampton. And he was there. He took time out to, speak to everybody, have photographs. He was there to practice, put a good practice session in, but he's got time for people. I don't know whether people would take this wrong, but I just hope that he does make time for himself on the practice table and gives himself that chance, because he's such a nice bloke that he's not going to sort of turn down, you know, signing an autograph or having a selfie for people. And that might be sort of to the detriment of his own game, if that makes sense. I know we sometimes talk about being too nice on the table. Now, of course, he's won the biggest title of all, but it will be interesting to see if he can sort of take his career to another level in terms of consistency. So winning sort of multiple events in a season, which he's not really done. If you look at his title wins throughout his career, it's sort of been spaced out. So I think that's next for Kyren, to see if he can maintain the consistency and beat the top players. Well, he's a top player himself, obviously, but the real top players who have been around a long time more often. But I wish him well.
Yeah, and also, I mean, he made a bit of a point of this a few years ago about he wanted to be on the main table. Well, now he's going to be. And what that brings is scrutiny, no hiding place, which I think, again, he will relish. You know, I think Kyren, and it's one of the reasons he won the World Championship, he backs himself. He believed he could win it. He won it. And I think that's the attitude he'll take into it. I'm going to, just as we wrap up, I'm going to start a new curse, because we don't have enough in the game. The curse of the Tour Championship, right? Because you're right in what you say about his form coming in this year to the Crucible was not good. Last year, he was playing brilliantly. He didn't win the Tour Championship, but at that event, I thought he was in some ways the best player. I know Sean Murphy played great in the final. They both played great, okay? But then, obviously, Higgins demolished him at the Crucible. But Sean, of course, who won it, he went out first round. This year, Mark Williams, who won it, went out first round. No one's ever done the double, the Tour Championship and the World Championship. So maybe that's a new curse that we can get a bit of heat under.
Well, you started something there, Dave. I think there was a similar thing with the China Open, when that was the last event.
Mark Selby
Mark Selby broke that curse, so he sort of destroyed that hex.
Yeah,
he won back to back. But yeah, maybe you started something there, Dave.
Well, that would be delicious. If Kyren were to win the Tour Championship, he would then have two curses over him. He would have curse and the curse of the Cruise. But I think that's enough about curses. And indeed, that's enough for this week. Thank you, Michael, very much for coming on. Just remind us where we can read you and see you.
Yeah, sure. So the website is totallysnooker.com. We're also on social media. So we've got a Facebook page, on X and Threads, and all our sort of video content with players and stuff we're going to have in the future. It's on Shots TV, and we've also got a YouTube channel as well with snippets.
Brilliant. Well, we're on the Sports Social Network. You can email us, snookerscenepodcast@mail.com, snookerscenepodcast@mail.com. On Wednesday, I'll be doing the top 10 of Stephen Hendry. So the top 10 of Stephen Hendry, as I say, it's all free. If I knew how to make it not free, I would, but I don't. So it's so it's all free. In the meantime, and you can say no, by all means, but would you like to say goodbye-bye?
Of course I do, Dave. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time. But for now, it is goodbye-bye.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.